Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Al Pollard, EEO officer and recently retired vice president of program development at McLennan Community College. Hosting the conversation is Ashley Cruz Turner, professor of history at MCC. This conversation was recorded November 12th in the KWBU studio.
Welcome to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. My name is Ashley Cruz Turner, and I teach American history at McLennan Community College. Today we are with Al Pollard, who retired this fall after 42 years of devoted service to McLennan Community College. He came to MCC in 1973 as Dean of Technical Education, a position he held for 29 years. In 2002, he was promoted to Vice President of Program Development and also served as the college's Equal Employment Opportunity Officer and Title IX Coordinator, and was recently inducted into the MCC Hall of Fame as part of our 50-year celebration. Al, you were born in Biloxi, Mississippi in 1940, and that was a very different time. You grew up in the segregated South. What was it like to grow up in that culture?
It was a challenge. It was pretty much a way of life, and at that time I knew no other way except for what was going on at the time. But as I grew in terms of years and age and becoming more aware of the surroundings and the environment, I began to notice that there was a big difference of treatment between different cultures, different races. And when we had separate schools, riding in the back of the bus, different treatment when we go to the shopping centers. We could not, you know, be involved in restaurants and having a nice, quiet meal. The only thing we could have with any enjoyment was fast foods. So it was a challenge to grow up in South Mississippi.
How did that segregation, systemic segregation and discrimination, how did that impact the way you saw yourself and your place in the world?
Well, as I grew and began to understand what was going on around me, I began to really think more for myself. My parents was very given and did not want to really be involved into get into my being more of a radical of the kinds of things that was going around, but you could not help, you know. Then there were groups of us that really began to discuss and observe what was happening to us. So it was like us not really being in existence or being equal to our other counterparts of white students of our age.
And maybe I should mention that, Al, I've known you for 15 years, and
yes,
I've been interested,
yes,
in your story from the day that I met you. And so we've had several conversations. And so if it sounds like I may be asking leading questions that I know a little bit about the story, maybe we should mention that. But
yes,
I've heard you,
sure,
speak many, mm-hmm, times about the impact that your parents had on you, very loving parents, two very solid citizens, and also the, mm-hmm, teachers that you met growing up in Biloxi. How were these people role models for you as a young person? What was the importance of being around those people?
Yeah, parents was very protective, as I indicated, and I think that's a good word to use. They were very protective for fear that even they could, that their jobs, you know, both my father and mother were working in the community at the Air Force Base, actually, and their jobs could be in question if they were began to be too active, you know, in the process. Eventually, the teachers in high schools were the ones that was really pushing for us to do better. Education was very highly valued with my parents and with teachers and with the black community. They urged us to study, but it seems as if they were saying, don't get really involved. Hmm. They kind of expected us to leave the city once we have graduated from high school. And I think that has really impacted the whole community because we had this big migration, as we have discussed before. We had this migration of go west, young man, go west. So many of them was going to California, or either they was going the opposite direction, going to Chicago, Detroit, where jobs was more plentiful because there were no jobs. At least they were not employing the African Americans or black or Negroes, however you want to call it. It was Negroes at the time for meaningful jobs, meaningful jobs.
Well, you did eventually leave Biloxi, and we certainly want to talk about that, but it seemed like you learned the value of work at an early age. Would you talk a little bit about your work experience when you were still in Biloxi?
Yes, my work experience, well, the main industry for Biloxi was tourism, employment at the Air Force Base, and the seafood industry. I was mainly working in the tourism because they had some very nice hotels up and down this 27 miles white sandy beach. and I was employed, I would imagine, at one time or another in most of those hotels. And this is where I really learned the skill of waiting tables. But starting from what we call bussing tables, you know what bussing tables,
yes.
Okay. Bussing tables, well, actually a dishwasher, then bussing tables. Then began to wait on tables at the various hotels and restaurants. I was carrying the baggage and doing those
right.
kinds of things. So I learned the value of work. And at that time, I made some pretty good money in terms of tips. And as I was beginning to think about college and being encouraged to save my money for college, from my parents and from the teachers, I was pretty astute. They forced me to be very pretty astute in saving money so that I could leave.
Yeah. And again, I guess waiting tables was one of the – every college student should know how to wait tables. But that was a skill that stayed with
right.
you for a long time.
I think I perfected that because that's what really got me through school.
Yeah.
Because when I went to off to school in Tennessee, one of the jobs that I found, at least my major advisor found for me, was waiting tables. And I did very, very well there.
Well, let's talk –
it was a skill.
Yeah. Let's talk about going to Tennessee. Everybody who knows you knows you're very passionate about civil rights. And I think that, at least in part, is because your story is a firsthand grassroots account of overcoming the systemic segregation in the South. And I'm going to ask you in a minute why you got involved in the civil rights movement. And again, people should know that you actually literally marched with Reverend Martin Luther King in the 1960s as part of the Nashville sit-ins. But tell us about how you got to Nashville. What was in Nashville? What brought you to Nashville?
Well, we had one of our high school teachers went to Tennessee State in Nashville, Tennessee. And he took me and two, three other guys when they was having the homecoming weekend. And to introduce us to the university. He was alumni of the university. I know there was on an enrollment improvement plan, and he was a part of that. And I was very, very much impressed. I had been to other schools, other colleges, rather, in the state, such as Jackson State or Alcorn. But I kind of wanted to move outside of the state. I wanted to move outside of Biloxi. So me and one of my best friends went to Nashville. I went to Tennessee State. He enrolled in Fisk, which was right down the street. So that was the motivation, because when I noticed how it was, classes was going on during the time that we were there, or part of the time anyway, and we noticed how the students were maneuvering, going from class to class, and, you know, the reaction, and we went to some of the halls of where the classes were being held, and, you know, it was just so very impressive. Mm-hmm. And some of the activities, you know, then of course we went to the football game, and,
right.
and you know, we were encouraged, and we had tours. And I was just really impressed, you know, with the reception that was afforded to us.
What did you study at Tennessee State?
Well, that's an interesting story. My first major was biology, because I had some visions of wanting to be a technician, a medical laboratory technician. And I was pretty good, at least I thought I was pretty good in science. In high school, until I noticed that we didn't have all the equipment that we need to really study it in depth. But for what they had, I did very well in science, and particularly biology. So that was my intention, was to study biology. Now, I changed majors. And the reason I changed majors is because I became a member of the Mississippi Club. That is, all students from the state of Mississippi had this group, and we
obviously out of state. You're out of state,
right? Right. It was in Tennessee, and so I heard students talk about receiving their checks and their tuitions being paid, and then I began to ask questions. I say, "What are you guys talking about?" They say, "Well, you know, if you're from Mississippi, and they in Mississippi does not offer the major that you want." In the black universities in Mississippi, that they would pay your tuition to go out of state. I could hardly believe that that was true, but it was.
To keep the system segregated.
To keep the system segregated.
Yes.
I just couldn't believe that, but that was true. So to make it short, I inquired. I asked. I wrote the state of Mississippi Department of Education. They gave me the address. You know, in fact, the guy gave me one of the receipts that he had received and got the address and made an inquiry. And sure enough. But the thing is, they offered a biology major at one of the at Jackson State. That's that's the black university there in Jackson, Mississippi. And the only way that I could have my tuition paid by the state is that I had to accept or find a major that was not available. So I did. So I changed to psychology. There was no psychology major. And I don't say that with a lot of pride, because, you know, on reflection in my more adult age, you know, I should have insisted that I go to the University of Mississippi and major in biology, but I did not. But that was my ticket. That was my ticket to get out of the state and to study. I have a minor in biology. At least I got enough hours to do
that. Well, psychology is going to play a huge role in your life. It's a fascinating story. For those of us, or for those who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Ashley Cruz-Turner, talking today with Vice President Al Pollard, recently retired at MCC. So there you are in Nashville. You're set. You're on your way. But then you got involved in the civil rights movement in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
What were you thinking? What were some of the things that you had to consider about getting into the movement?
Well, I had to consider my parents being in Mississippi and perhaps was reading the newspaper or looking at television, and they would see me on TV.
which would not be a good thing.
Would not be a good thing from there in Mississippi. But I mentioned the Mississippi Club. Then I became a member of a fraternity there at the college. And they were all excited about how things were during that time, the environment of Nashville. Nashville has big problems, you know. I mean, I wasn't really running away from anything in Mississippi because I found the same thing in Nashville.
Right.
So, I mean, we could not do some of the same things in Nashville that I mentioned that we could not do in Biloxi. So it began to swell in terms of the segregation that was going on and the treatment of the African Americans in Nashville. And as the sit-in demonstrators were, and that, you know, the first was at North Carolina State University, right. And then it just swept the South. It began to go from one university to the next. So our university did the same thing. They said, gosh, let's do this. Let's go and sit in at Woolworth and Cress and some of the other stores. But those were the major ones.
The dining,
Walgreens.
Dining counters that would not serve African Americans.
It was dining counters that would not serve, in particular in Walgreens, where all of them had a counter where you can buy lunch and all you would want a Coke and a hamburger.
Uh-huh.
That's all that. Open
to the public, but not open to African Americans.
Right. So therefore, not the public.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You know. In saying that, so we tested it, and we marched downtown, and presented ourselves to sit at the counter. It was either Walgreens or Crest or maybe even Woolworth, but those were the three major establishments that would not serve. And in sitting there, the waitress would say, "We do not serve colored here." And we would say, "Well, we will sit here and tell you service." Mm. And then it began to swell with other, you know, with the whites that's surrounding us.
Right.
And it began to be very noticeable throughout the stores and through outside that those coloreds are sitting at the counter wanting to be served, and they refuse to move.
Yeah.
And this started, at times, a ruckus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were met with violence at times,
Right, they called the police. And the police would come and saying that we're trespassing. And we're not trespassing. We just simply wanted to be served a Coca-Cola and a hamburger or just a Coke, whatever. And then words that I dare not say on the radio was that we were called names and then cigarette butts. And that time they had balconies around the areas and they was thumping cigarette ashes and cigarettes and calling all kinds of names. And nonviolence was our method.
Right.
We would not strike back. And we were told that from the very, very beginning. Now, this is before Martin Luther King came. But we had some persons who had these kinds of experiences before in terms of organization. We would not fight back. If we were to fight back or if we were to strike, then we would be banned from participating in future demonstrations if there were to be any, and there were. It's hard to turn your cheek, though, you know, at times. But we did not. So we were arrested.
So
quite roughly, we were arrested by the police because some of us refused to remove ourselves from the from the counter seats.
Uh-huh.
And so we were dragged away and put into vans, or police vans. They even used the city school bus, you know, to take us downtown. And yes, I was arrested.
Yes,
I say that now,
right.
but I was arrested. I did spend some time. And that if one were to be released, they say no, it's all or none.
Right.
And we stayed.
Why was it important for you to be a part of that movement?
Because I didn't like what I was experiencing as a young man. And I was really doing it for the future and for the family that I expected to have one day and did not want to see them go through this same thing. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
It actually worked. But, you know, you know, studying psychology, being in sociology, listening to your college professors teach, you know, and listening, you know, to the news and what was happening across the country. If we don't do something about it, who will? Right. Who will step forward? So it was really left to the students. You didn't see a lot of older persons participating. But I must say is that we don't want to give the impression that it was only the Negroes or the African Americans that was participating in these demonstrations. There were a number of whites that was doing that. Mm-hmm. And it was coming from Vanderbilt or Peabody or Belmont. They had, you know, mm-hmm. a couple of schools, other colleges, but primarily from Vanderbilt, who participated. We call them sympathizers. Mm-hmm. They were very supportive in joining many of the marches. Not in a great number, but enough to be noticeable that this was just not a black thing. So I think it was for the country and for the good of the country.
Must have been scary, and it must have been horrible in so many ways. And again, facing violence with nonviolence, and then again, the police coming and arresting you for being nonviolent.
And that's a question that many ask. They say, "Weren't you scared to do this?" I say, "Sure, I was,
right.
but not deterred from it, though."
Yeah. Getting through it. What were the positives to be gained from resisting and also growing up in that society? Is there a silver lining anywhere?
When you see the efforts that was made and the results, is that when they open the lunch counters to serve, when they open the movie theaters so that African Americans could attend, when they open the hotels as we travel along the highway, as they open the city buses, those were rewards, mm-hmm. you know, for the efforts that we was making. And it was a slow process, you know. And then, of course, there were other things, you know, like the great public service, bus service, in Montgomery.
Right. Let me shift a little bit away from that moment in just a way. You are a legendary mentor at MCC.
Well.
But you had a great mentor. You met a great mentor at Tennessee State. Can you talk a little bit about Dr. Atchison?
Yes. My major advisor. When I changed majors, his was the office I went to talk about a major in psychology, and giving him the story, which he fully understood. And so he gave me the opportunity, you know, to take a few courses to see if this is really what I would like to do. And he told me about the job opportunities, and he said that you would need at least a master's, if not further. Because what my vision of what I wanted to do was to be a college professor, or to be involved in higher education. Mm-hmm. I saw that from day one. That was one of the things that I noticed when I first made that tour. You know, I want to be like these professors are.
Uh-huh.
But he was my mentor. He was my advisor. And he took a liking to me among many, many others. He was just a person who was very student-oriented, you know, in Elvin, because he understood the times that we spent in jail or was arrested. He was the one that would come to bail us out, even though he said, "I'm not going to do this every time, you guys." He never participated because he said that he was beyond that. He was too old, and I really think they had some restrictions on our professors.
I'm sure. In
that. He never admitted that, but that's what we pretty much concluded was mm-hmm. the reason. But they was very, very supportive.
He helped, and he also, your first job teaching.
Yes. He was my major advisor, an undergraduate, and then through the master's, he was my major advisor for that as well. And then when we began to look for jobs, he was very instrumental in my, you know, locating and finding a job at Lincoln University in Jefferson City, Missouri. I went there as a psychology instructor.
I can imagine you were quite happy to get a job coming out of school. And
Yes.
When were you supposed to report to Lincoln?
Yeah, I was to report to Lincoln in August of 1963. Now, that happened to have been the very same weekend that they was having the March on Washington. And that was my intent, was
right.
to go to the March on Washington. I needed to go to Biloxi, Biloxi first, to catch a ride with, you know, with some adults that was going to the March on Washington. So I called my father and said, well, I was coming home. I wanted to come home because I wanted to go to the March on Washington, but I have this job waiting for me and I'm supposed to report. He said, and I, one of the few times I asked, what do you think I should do that?
Uh-huh.
And my dad said, I think you better take it. Well, I better not say on the TV what he said, on radio what he said. But he said, I think you better take that job in Jefferson City.
Go to work.
Go to work.
Yeah.
Go to work. So, of course, I did.
You, from Jefferson City, you went to Huntsville, Alabama, worked at Alabama A&M, a dean at Alabama A&M. And from Huntsville, I know, was a very different experience. I know you, during that time, you encountered a very famous American political figure, George Wallace. For listeners who did not know who George Wallace was, can you remind our audience who George Wallace?
Yeah, let me make one quick correction there. I was employed at a state technical college there, not Alabama A&M, even though we were closely associated and did some partnership work between the two. Yes, George Wallace was governor at the time that I took the job. And anyone knows anything about history at all, then he was a very staunch segregationist.
Right.
Very, very staunch. He had a dual system of technical colleges and community colleges in the state. One for Negroes, that's what we were called at the time, and one for whites. And, of course, I was at the Negro Technical College. And he had a swell of them across the state. And he was, when he was shot in Maryland.
Right, 1972.
And he was running for president at the time and was getting a lot of support as well. When he was, and we happened to be in Montgomery at the time that that occurred.
And
we were preparing for a statewide meeting of technical colleges, and then the announcement was made, you know, up and down the hall that the governor has been shot, and I was on the 6th, 7th floor of this state building, and being the only African American in that meeting was quite taunting. It was a lifetime. It seemed as if it was a lifetime before they finally announced who was responsible for shooting George Wallace, and it was quite a relief when I found out that that it was a white person that did that.
Right.
And you want to know about you want to know about my visit to his office?
Well, I know we're also at the end of our time. You have spent your whole lifetime in higher education. From Huntsville, you came to Waco and MCC and spent over 40 years at MCC. Was that the right choice?
Yes, because that's what I always wanted to do. I mean, really from day one, I knew that I wanted to be in higher education. And my advisor knew that as well. That's why he was so elated when he had the opportunity to recommend me for the job in Missouri, you know, as a college instructor. Then, yes, that was the right choice for me. I perhaps would like to think I could have done many other things.
Right.
But education was my thing, which was true for most of the persons coming out of Biloxi High School. I mean, you know, either they were going to be teachers or they were going to be doctors, or they was going to be lawyers, but they had to leave the state to acquire that for the most part.
Al Pollard, thank you very much.
Quite welcome. I enjoyed it. I wish we had more time.
That was Al Pollard, EEO officer and recently retired vice president of program development at McLennan Community College. Hosting the conversation was Ashley Cruz Turner, professor of history at MCC. This conversation was recorded November 12th in the KWBU studio.